What's up, everybody? I'm Harper. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to take this off now because I'll probably get the nerves and get the sweat. I'm actually from a place called Matoaka, Virginia. And some of y'all may or may not have heard of Matoaka. It's in Chesterfield County. It's about probably 2 hours southeast of here. It's like the southern tip of Chesterfield County. It's country, but not quite as pretty as this country. I've come to love this area. I haven't been here very long, and I love it out here. So I was just sharing before I came up. I had no idea what I'm going to share, and I actually like that. I don't like. The more I think about it, the more it's like I get wrapped up in self-will and oh my God, I got to look good and I got to say this and all that self-centered fear kind of takes over. And then it just doesn't feel right. And I haven't done this a lot, but I've done it enough to know that it just doesn't feel right when I do it that way. And the first time I spoke, that's what I did. I like spent like 2 days writing stuff down. I had a timeline. It was going to be great. And just like we were sharing about it, I looked at the clock and there was about 10 minutes left and I hadn't shared the first thing about recovery. And then I started trying to cram it in, and it was horrible. And, my sponsor said, how was it? How was it? And I was like, it was horrible. It was terrible. He's like, it doesn't matter, man. He said, it's all God's share. It's not your share anyway. So it doesn't matter. Whatever you shared was what needed to be shared right then and there. So anyway, I don't know. We'll see what happens here. And I know I woke up this morning and the first thing I thought about was a good friend of mine that passed away yesterday at 8 a.m. She had, I think she had 29, 30 years sober. And I say a good friend. I never met her. I just met her on Zoom So, I've known her for probably over 2 years. And we had this great relationship, and she was good friends with my sponsor's wife, who's also in recovery, and we created this really cool relationship through Zoom from COVID, being on Zoom. And she lived in California, and she lost her battle with cancer yesterday. And I was just talking to that she had so many people, everybody that in AA around her, and very, very spiritually awakened people around her. And she was a very spiritually awakened person. And it was just beautiful. That's what I woke up in the midst of death. That was a beautiful thing to think of her this morning. And I got up and did what I've been doing on a daily basis for a little over 3 years. I woke up and shortly after I opened my eyes and I grab a pen and paper and I do a 10th step and I just write down the fears that are already on me. Within 10 minutes of waking up, when my eyes open, the fears are already on me. So I just write those fears out on the paper. I write my prayers out, thanking this power for revealing them to me and removing them from me. And then I can go out into the day. And then after that, I meditate. I'm a avid 11th step person. I think the second part of the 11th step is one of the most missed steps that is so important. And I'll talk a little bit more about that, but so I just meditated, and while I was meditating, I saw Nicole I get visions in my meditations, which is pretty cool sometimes, not all the time. So I saw her and I felt her, felt her energy, and it was great. It was great. And that's, all that I just said right there. I haven't been sober that long. And for me to be sharing that is incredible. Like, I'm not that guy. That's not me, to share some meditation. I'm meditating. I'm writing my fears down on paper. I'm like, what is that? that's crazy. So my sober date is June 16th, 2018. I do have a sponsor. I have a home group. It's called Fellowship of the Spirit. We just started meeting live again. It meets every Tuesday from 7 to 8:15 in Pantops. It's at this new beautiful church called The Point. Come check us out. I'll just say this. We're laid back. That's all I'll say. It's easy meeting. So anyway, so I'm very grateful to be here. Dale, thank you so much for asking me. I say no to a lot of stuff, but I don't say no to AA. I just can't do it because I'm so grateful. You know, I'm standing here because of AA. These clothes on my back are because of AA. The job that I have and I love is because of AA. The vehicle I drive is because of AA. I mean, everything, the relationship, my family, all of it is because of AA. It's I've been coming to AA for a long time. So let's get into it here. My first AA meeting, I was 17 years old. I was transferred from a juvenile detention center to my first treatment center. And in that treatment center, I went to my first AA meeting. And it was a huge meeting. It was probably 60 or 70 people in there. It was in this huge cafeteria in the place where I went to treatment at. And I was 17. And there was just about everybody in there was a lot older than me. I didn't relate. I didn't think, you know, I just thought I was unlucky. I got in some, you know, I like drinking and having a good time, you know, but it was, you know, from the first time I drank, the drink gave me the power that I always lacked. You know, I now look back and I'm like, alcohol was my higher power. You know, it was definitely King alcohol, as it's explained. And, you know, I got into some trouble and, you know, get put on house arrest and, you know, at 17 years old, none of that pertains to me, you know, I'm going to do what I want. So, you know, so the cops came and took me away in front of my parents. My mom was crying and bawling and I could care less. I didn't care. You know, I don't know. It's weird. It's like, I just didn't care. Even from that young knowing, I was like, all I could think about was like, I couldn't wait to get back out. So I could go see my friends again. I was like, man, I got to have more of that. And so it's funny. So actually, after that, I stayed sober. Back then, it was clean and sober because I got some other problems too. But and I moved away. My stepfather was civilian military for Fort Lee. He worked in computers. He was a computer analyst, and he got an offer to move out to Washington State. I worked for Boeing for, it was like a year or something. So my probation officer was like, look, if you do this, we'll let you off everything here. You know, you're going through the treatment center, you're clean, you know, go out here and we'll just let you off everything. So I did that. It was kind of cool too. The school I went to, the first grade class was the first of its kind in the country. It was actually a drug rehab class in a public school. And I got like half credit for it. It was pretty cool. We just kind of sat on our desk in a circle and kind of just, you know, talked and got our stuff out and whatever. It was really cool. And so I stayed sober the whole time I lived there. Some tragic stuff happened. I've never known my real father. He passed away in a drinking and driving accident. He killed him and his best friend. I never knew him. So there's really not a lot of remorse to be there, but I got a bunch of money that was waiting on me. So as soon as I moved back to Virginia, I didn't last. I think I went to one meeting. I didn't last. And you know, I don't want to get stuck on the drunk along too much. I've been through a lot in my drinking. And like I mentioned, I won't get into it a whole lot because I do respect AA. But my drinking always took me other places. It took me a little while to figure out that I'm an alcoholic, because I've been to the other fellowship too. I went to the other fellowship a lot when I was younger. But you know, this is what I'll say. I'll try to wrap it up with the drunkalog. I've had 5 DUIs. My first one was in 1997. I got one every year till 2000. So I got 4 right off the bat. 2000 is when they really cracked down and Mothers Against Drunk Driving, you know, went to town and got, you know, went to the senators and, you know, and tightened down on it. That's when it really got bad. So I kind of lucked out on the first 4. In between there, I in Chesterfield County one night, there used to be this thing called Friday Cheers in Richmond. It's an outside thing. It's right outside the Richmond Coliseum. And I see Courtney smiling over there. But I remember starting off with a big gulp cup like this, the big one, you know, the big one. And I had like half bourbon in that thing and the rest Coke. And that's how I started off. And I went to this thing and I just with a straw and just sucked it down. And we left there. We went to this huge party out in Chesterfield County, a huge party. It was kids everywhere. And they busted the party. And I was walking out of the party. And I had a Bud Light in my hand. And the cop was like, "Hey, son, you need to pour that out." And I was not a good kid. I said a couple words to him, and he said, "I'll give you one more chance to pour it out." And I said, "No problem." I poured it out like this. It was pouring down my face. And so he handcuffed me, threw me in the car, and off he went to bust the party. So I decided I didn't want to be in that car no more. So I got out of the car handcuffed, escaped from the car for about 6 hours. I went and sat in the woods and started sobering up and was like, "What in the hell did I do?" but thinking the whole time, like, I'm just thinking the whole time, how do I get back? Like, I got to get, like, because I was starting to sober up. I was like, I need to get another drink. I need to get my other stuff. I need to, you know, it was before cell phones. So I was trying to figure out how to get to a phone. And so I'm just sitting in these woods and it's starting to get daybreak. It's starting to get light. And so I decided, man, there's no way they're waiting for me. You know, there's no way. And so I come creeping out of the woods, you know, handcuffed. My wrists are bleeding because they didn't lock it down. So it's clamping down on me. I'm bleeding. I get like 1 foot out into the yard and all I see is like, there's like 12 cops with it. They're like, "Get out." They roughed me up a little bit and I was talking mess to them the whole time. I'm a little guy, but I was bullied a little bit growing up, so I always had a chip on my shoulder, and I'm not one to back down. But I had a little bit of that coming when they roughed me up. But so anyway, that's just to give you kind of a little history of how my drinking was. I was pretty like, I was always that guy, like, you know, I would do it. Like, "Hey man, who's gonna do this?" I'm like, "I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it." You know, it's like, "Who's gonna drive?" "I'll drive." Like, always, it could be somebody sober in the group. I got it. I'll drive. Be wasted to drive. It's all my DUIs. So anyway, you know, it's a little bit of the craziness. I fell out of a tree one night, climbed to the tip top of this tree, and I was at my friend's house, and pretty far. it was good ways up, and wasted and on some other substances, and fell out the tree, fell past one of my buddies, got halfway down. Somehow, I look back now and I'm just like, man, I'm so grateful that this power was protecting me even back then, because I don't know how I like snagged a branch on the way down with this arm. And I kind of did a 180 and kept going, but it slowed me down enough. It ripped all the skin off the inside of my arm. And I landed at the base of the tree on this shoulder, my feet straight up the tree. And I lost my breath. And I was just like, I remember like it being really blurry. I thought I was dying actually. And then I just remember my friend, her name's Tammy D. She's not with us anymore, but she was over top of me like this. My nickname's Bubba. She goes, "Oh, that's Bubba Hester. Don't worry about it. He'll be all right." And she went in and she brought me out of Bud Light. I came back. So that's kind of just to let you know, that's kind of how my drinking was. It was always, I never knew what was going to happen. I liked it like that. Like, I didn't like planning anything. I never knew where I was going to end up. I ended up at the Outer Banks many times for weeks. I wouldn't call my family or nothing. Like, my mom one time, she was like, when I finally showed back up, she was like, "I'm getting ready to put missing persons out." I didn't know where he were. You know, came back, she was at my apartment. I was shaking so bad I couldn't brush my teeth. I was like, I hadn't brushed my teeth in like 2 weeks. I drank so much and hadn't eaten. She had to like brush my teeth for me. So that's just a little bit of what I put my family through, what I put myself through. I guess I got to like my mid-30s and I got to where I thought I was being smart. I was like managing my drinking and my drugging. And I was just not going anywhere. I would just stay at home, you know? And, because it was, for the most part, I'd go out some, but I, you know, I strategically kind of did it to where I wouldn't drive, and it was always kind of thought it out pretty well, you know. And I had people that would come to my house and bring me what I needed, so I didn't have to leave. I'd always make sure I didn't run out of my alcohol. So, you know, like on a Friday night, I would stock up on my alcohol. I'd call my boy, you know, and we'd be good. You know, I'd be good for the weekend. And and this will happen too. I'll lose my train of thought, so I'll try to get back on it. This happens quite often with me. So I thought I was managing it, you know, basically because I was not getting in trouble now. It's like, yeah, as long as I'm not going to jail, you know, because I've been in jail a few times. I'm like, as long as I'm not going to jail, got the family, like they think I'm doing great. You know, I'm dating this girl that, by the way, drank and did stuff just like I did. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Like she drank just like I did, but she was responsible. Like she paid the bills. She made sure I paid all my bills. She made me get my license back, like all that. But she drank just like I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's like a match made in heaven. And so that all that was happening. And I went to do a favor for a friend. I worked at this steel shop up in Richmond called the Park Steel. Great place to work, and really good at what I did there. And I got off work on a Friday at 11. We got off early, and I went to help a friend move his stuff. He wasn't here. I had to move on a few things and take it down to Deltaville where his dad lived. And I did what I always do on Friday when I get off. I already had the 6-pack of 16-ounce Bud Lights, just 6-pack of it, big ones. So yeah, see what I did there? See, you know, 6-pack, but they're 16-ounce. So I had them in the cooler already on ice. So as soon as I got in there at 11 o'clock, first thing I do is start driving. I go get their, you know, his stuff. His girlfriend meets me there. She's got a case of Bud Light. Thanks for letting me move. I put that behind my seat of the truck. And so I get all this stuff. I'm drinking the whole time, So get that 6-pack down. Well, you know, when there's two left in the cooler, I start grabbing from that case, you know, and got to have them cold ones, you know, keep them rotated. So I start throwing them in there. And it's the whole time driving, you know, and drinking. I mean, just drinking. And so I get all the way out to Deltaville. I meet his dad. We do our thing. I remember his dad asking me if I was okay. I was already starting to kind of get into a blackout. I was at the point now in my drinking where I didn't really like totally black out, but like be in and out. Like I remember a lot of stuff. It'd sometimes be foggy and then it would finally come back to me a day or two later. But I remember him saying, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." So I was living in Short Pump at the time. So I made it all the way back from Deltaville, got on Broad Street. I don't know if any of y'all know that area where Tom Leonard's is. And my phone slides down and goes into the floorboard. I reach down to get it, and all I remember is blam, ran right into the back of the car. It shook me up pretty good. I didn't get hurt. The other people in front of me didn't get hurt, but it was like I had to kind of like shake the cobwebs off. It was like, you know, what happened? And I look, and I see the people moving around in the car. And I'm like, I gotta go. Reverse, I'm gone. So I'm like literally like 3 minutes from my house. So get to my house, I'm like emptying my truck. I got beer cans everywhere. I got getting all the beer out of there, you know, getting everything out. And about 30 minutes later, I see the cops pull up in the driveway. And so I do what any drunk would do. I grab like 3 Bud Lights. I put 2 in my pocket. I had 1 in my hand. I went out the back. I jumped the fence and went into my neighbor's yard and leaned up against the fence in their yard and cracked the beer. I drank those 3 beers. I could hear them inside talking to my girlfriend, her lying for me, saying, "I don't know where he is." And I went up in my neighbor. We were good friends. We drank and did stuff together. So I went in there and did some stuff that they had in there. I was like, "Look, I'm going to jail probably." I remember he had a fifth of bourbon or something. I hit that. And get my head right, you know. So I go over. Basically, what happened? I ran into the back of my license plate. My whole front bumper was in the road there, so it didn't take them long to find out where I was at. And I don't know how the truck made it home either. It was pretty messed up. It was an old 93 Toyota T100 that I loved. It was actually my dad's truck. It was very emotional and for me to let that go. But I went to jail that night and I came out and I was like, all right, here we go. From 2000 to now, this was April 6, 2018. Here I am again. Same crap. Here we go again. Got to call mom. I got a DUI. The letdown, the shame. Here we go again, So I'm like, all right. So now I'm starting to figure out, I'm like, I got to do something because they're going to get me. I got to hit and run. And they're charging me first offense DUI. My other ones were so old that they didn't find me. Thank goodness, because they would have threw the book at me if they found the other ones. So I was like, all right, I got to do something, So I went and got a lawyer. I got a really good lawyer, paid a bunch of money. He's like, man, you got to join this outpatient, thing, that'll help you out. So I did that. And then as soon as I signed to join that thing, they're like, hey, we drug test you twice, we can do you up to twice a week. I'm like, damn it. I'm thinking, how am I going to fit my drinking? Like, I got to get the drinks in somehow in between. So I started doing that thing, where I'm trying to manage, how am I going to do this? And it just didn't work. It didn't work. I just ended up going, I've got to quit. I just got to quit just during the duration of this. I got to stop. Because I don't want to get in more trouble. And it didn't. I mean, I was still sneaking my little stuff in. But I remember I sobered up long enough. I mean, I never had more than like 4 or 5 days in a row sober during this time. But it was a lot more than I've had in a long time. And I started just getting a little bit, these little moments of clarity. And what did it was one night, remember I told you about the girlfriend that drank just like I did. So I'm sitting there, it's like Friday night, I'm sober. And she was one of those drinkers. It was good, it was good, it was good. And then it was not good. It was like a light switch. And it went from real, real nice and sweet to real, real mean and angry. And I remember just sitting out, I was just watching TV and I'm sober on a Friday night. And she's just like, and I was starting to go to AA meetings again. I had to get the paper signed. And she's like, this just, and I'm just like, this is how I've been living for 8 years. And the only way I could do it was I was on the same level as she was. And I was drunk all the time. That was our only common thing that held us together. And so my birthday's on June 14th and it was coming up. And we got in this huge fight. She got physical with me and did some stuff. I didn't retaliate like I never did. So I left. I just left that night. I went to my mom's. I had this birthday party on the 14th that, I got totally wasted, did some other stuff, stayed up all night. So on the 15th, June 15th, I went to this bar with my brother, my mom, my best friend that's here tonight. And there was a couple other people there, and I'm sitting in the bar. I got a Bud Light in this hand. I got a Fireball shot in this hand. And I'm standing there, and I'm like, this sucks. I hate my life. I just remember this total hopeless feeling. But I remember telling myself, this is the last day I'm going to drink. I was like, this is it. I've got to stop. This sucks. And that's the last day I drank. I didn't know, but the seed had been planted so young with me with AA, and that there was another way of life, that's what I remembered. So I just started going to a bunch of AA meetings. I got really involved in that outpatient thing that I was going to. I really became really good friends with the counselor, Miss Linda, who I still talk to this day. And she gets me to come out and speak sometimes to the class. So I just started getting involved in, like I said, I used to go to the other fellowship a lot. So my plan was, and I was in my area, I didn't want to go to that fellowship because I knew there'd be people there that would know me. And I wasn't quite sure if I was just yet, you know, I was still thinking maybe I'll just go through this thing, get through the DUI, then I can get back to my, you know, my drinking. And so I wasn't totally convinced yet. And so I remember, this one night I went to this church where they had both fellowships. I used to go to this church all the time. It used to, this NA meeting used to be my home group. And I remember where it used to be. I remember what room it used to be in. So I went in that room. Well, no, I didn't go. So I didn't go to that room. I went to the AA room because I didn't want to go to the NA meeting. And I went in there and I sat down and I thought I was going to the AA meeting. As soon as I sat down, I mean, not to be stereotypical, but it's very easy to know what meeting you're in when you go in AA. It's just, when I sat down, I looked around and I was like, yep, this is the NA meeting. And then I was like, there's them, remember them, remember him. So I just had my, I didn't want to have to explain. I was ashamed. You know, here's these people that got like 20 and 30 years now, you know, and I didn't want to talk to them. But I also remember in that moment, in that meeting, that about a minute after that, I put my head down and I started crying. I still get emotional because I just knew, I was like, here it is. I was like, dang, I'm back. And the people, like, they, when I lifted my head up, they, those people that I knew, they were looking at me and they were smiling. They were like, you know what I mean? And I remember their smiles. It was like, oh man. I was like, here it is, you know? And so I just started this thing again, man. It's so weird. Like, I drank for 34, 35 years. You know, I got a little about 4 years of sobriety now, a little over. And I don't know what it was. I don't know. Why did I finally, standing in the bar that day, just, I knew. I was like, this is it. I'm done. And I don't know, you know, what made that happen. The hopelessness, the dark feeling that I was carrying around that I actually, like, saw finally. Because I was sober long enough to go, oh, wow, yeah, you're a great dude. You know, I don't know what it was, but I know in that meeting, I think this power that we talk about, higher power, all power, God, I think it was caressing me in that meeting. It laid its hand on me, you know, and I was like, hey, welcome home. Because I just said, it was just this feeling, and it didn't last long, but it was just like, man, you're going to be okay. So all it was, I didn't hear any voice or anything like that. It was just a feeling, and it felt great. So I just started going to a lot of meetings, and I went to both. I went to both fellowships, and I got a sponsor in the other fellowship. And so as always, and I'm living with my mom at this point, me and my dog, Parker. Man, I had some great amends with that dog. He passed away a couple years ago, and I'm so glad that I was able to be sober with my dog. It's, you know, because I didn't take care of him all the time, and it was nice to be have amends. You know, I had amends with my dog. It's crazy, right? I just took care of him finally and gave him like 100% of my attention, which all dogs want, you know. That was a sad note. So I got this sponsor. I'm going NA, I'm going AA. I've got a home group in each, but I'm really, really connecting to AA. Like, I'm hearing the solution in AA more. Not saying anything bad about the other fellowship, just I'm hearing something different in AA. And So I do as always have done when I'm getting sober around 8 or 9 months, is I decide that the best thing I need in my life is a relationship. I'm ready now. Good to go, man. I got some money in my pocket, looking a little better, with a little meat back on my bone. Like, that's what I need, man. That's what need me a girl. And so, but I haven't dated in a long time. I'm like, man, what in the world? How do you do this? You know, I can't go to a bar. I mean, that's easy, you know. Have a couple of drinks and there you go, you know. Take all the fears away. And it's easy. So I decided to get on this Tinder thing. And I didn't have a good experience on Tinder. I'm just like, oh man, it's hard for this alcoholic to be on something like that. because I'm not good at being let down. You know, I take things hard. I'm very sensitive. You know, I probably overthink stuff a lot. You know, and it's like to get said no to so many times, or just like, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Like, yeah, sorry, yeah. All these women, wow. I'm like, get all these hits back. It's like nothing. It was like nothing. I was like, what's wrong with me? You know, and also I'm at that like 9 month mark where like the pink cloud is kind of gone and all this stuff up here is really, really starting to mess with me. Like, I'm very, very resentful. Like, I'm doing some stuff at work. I'm doing some behavior at work that was worse than when I was drinking. Like, I hit a guy in the head with the welding helmet one time. My welder, which was my helper, I mean, it's point blank range, just hit him in the head with it, asked him to come out in the middle of the shop, let's do this, and, you know, screw the job, blah, 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 you know, stuff like that, you know, just like crazy behavior. So at 9 months sober, I'm thinking, yeah, I need to bow. I could give so much to another woman, you know. So anyway, so I had kind of given up on it for about a month. And I was like, man, let me try this thing one more time. So I got on there. And I had a light from this girl. I looked at her. She's kind of cute. You know, it's like, all right. You know, she's from Charlottesville. Like, I don't really know nothing about Charlottesville. So we liked her. So we started chatting. The other thing I didn't mention, these Tinder things, like the women, we'd have good conversations until I told them I didn't drink. Then it was like, you know, that really messes with people because they don't know how to break the ice. I don't totally understand because I still don't know how to do that. I'm a little better, but not that good, you know? So, but this lady, she was like, hey, I just want to tell you, like, I don't drink. I'm like, yes, like me neither. And I was like, actually, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm 9 months sober. And she's like, me too. I'm almost 10 years sober. I was like, damn it. I was like, you know, the whole like, you know, the year sober thing. But she was like, okay with it. So one Saturday, I came to Charlottesville and I met this lady. You know, we hung out and it was real. It was actually really cool. It was easy to talk to her, you know. Looking back on it now and knowing a little bit more now, we were very similar alcoholics, especially with the, you know, the little things going on up here. So we hung out and she was like, hey, I want to take you to my home group meeting tonight. I'm like, cool, I'd love to go. And it was the Fellowship of Spirit meeting. It was up on Broadest Church. I think it was on a Saturday, up in Pantops. And so I went. And you got to understand, I've been in and out of AA pretty much my whole adult life, in and out, in and out, in and out. I'm used to the old school AA. My area down there in the Tri-City areas of Richmond is old school. Like, you know, they'll tell newcomers to, you know, be quiet and you have enough time to share, you know, sit there. A little rigid, not quite as bad now, but it was very, very rigid, you know, So this meeting, when I went into it, right off the bat, I could tell it was a little different. It's like, all right. So I sit down and this guy named John, he says, hey, man, we love for new people to share first. Why don't you go ahead and share? I said, nope, I'm good. I was like, I'm just going to sit here. So this other lady shared. And I remember her sharing. And these people in here, they share for a while. They share like 10, 15 minutes. There's no end to the meeting. The meeting ends when everyone is shared. So sometimes the meetings can go on for two and a half hours. And I remember this first lady that shared, man, she shared in a way that I'd never heard shared in an AA meeting. It was very open, a lot of cussing, a lot of honesty. It was different. It scared me. I was like, I don't know about this. Like, I was kind of drawn away. I was like, ah, this is kind of weird. So then I shared next. That guy, Johnny, asked me to share it. He said, come on, man. We want to hear it, man. We're tired of hearing, because there was only like eight or nine of them in there. Like, we're tired of hearing each other. We'll hear somebody new. So I kind of just shared like where I was at right then and there and everything that was going on, and, you know, a little bit about my fears of what was going to happen if I really was going to stay sober, because 9 months is usually when I relapse. And then proceeded the other members of that home group share. And I just, man, to this day, I just, it's like, I think I just, that was defined. That was the one meeting I finally went to where I heard exactly what I need to hear. And it all made sense. Kind of. I heard them talking. I kept hearing them. They were sharing like these crazy stories that were very sad to me. And they were laughing about them. And they kept talking about, I just did an inventory. I just took another inventory. It's just more inventory. It's more wreckage of the past that we got to keep clearing. That's what they kept talking about. And then they were like, oh my God. And I had this great meditation and da da da. And it just, all the members of this group kept talking about that. That was the general thing that they kept talking about. I was just like, what are they talking about? I've never been to an AA meeting and heard people talk that much about taking an inventory and meditating. You know, which now I know is 10 and 11. But I was like, what are they talking about? So me and this girl ended up staying at her house the next morning. I was like, what are y'all talking about? And she handed me a pen and a pad. And she said, do you want me to show you? And very, very fearfully, I said, yes. Because the whole time back in my head, I'm like, men and women. Men with men, women with women. No. Hey, says, you got to do this. But I did it. And she just showed me what her sponsor had showed her and what they were talking about in that meeting. And it was basically just a 10th step. But the way I wrote it, I am resentful at because I had fear. Not I am resentful at because you did this to me and da-da-da-da-da and you're to blame and it's all your fault. You know, it's I am resentful at because I have fear. And you just keep writing until you're done. And if you don't have any resentments, I just write about my fears. And so I did that. I'm like, all right, I'm done. She goes, all right, now these are the prayers we write. She told me the prayers they wrote. So I did that. She goes, all right, that's what I'm done. She goes, no, now we do an 8-step list. I'm all right. She goes, just write everybody down. I think needs to be amended. I'm like, all right, I'm done. She goes, all right, now read it to me. I went, whoa. I was like, hold on. This is not how to do it. She's like, just if you don't want to, I understand. She said, you don't have to, but I did. I just felt moved to do it. I just read her what I wrote, and a lot of it had to do with my mom, a little bit with my stepdad, a lot with me, very resentful at myself. And I just, as I was reading it to her, I felt this really, really big relief. Like I felt, started feeling better. Like this just started slowing down a little bit. So I did that, and then she said, how do you feel? She goes, how do you like? I said, it's crazy. I feel a little better. It's like, I feel like something's been lifted off of me. She goes, yeah, right. She goes, cool. We'll do it again. I was like, what do you mean? Like right now? She goes, no, whatever you want. She goes, but we do it twice a day. That's how our sponsors ask us to do it. We do it twice a day, once upon awakening and sometime during the day, the afternoon. She goes, the other thing we also do is we do this meditation. I'm like, what do y'all do? She goes, yeah, we do this meditation. You know, if you want to learn how to do it, I can point you in the right direction. We do a typical, this type of meditation. So I was like, yeah, I want to know about this too. Because like I said, I had heard in that meeting something, just the way that they were sharing, I've never heard sharing. And they had the meeting set up like that, where it was okay to share in a very free way. There was no specific topic, and I'm not talking anything bad about any other AA meeting. I get it, something out of every AA meeting I go to, whether I like the meeting or not, or whether I'm resentful at the meeting or not, you know, because that's how my higher power works. You know, but in this meeting specifically, I just felt a different vibe in there where it was just really laid back, and I felt like I could probably share anything in that meeting, which was very new to me. I'd never felt that way, especially where I was from coming up in the AA that I came up in. And so I was like, yeah, I want to do everything y'all are doing. But I was like, I don't know about this meditation though, man. That's kind of weird stuff, you know? It was like this, like the hippies and stuff. You know, like, what are you doing? Like, you know, what is this thing? And so she gave me some information. I signed up for this course down in Short Pump. It's called Transcendental Meditation or Vedic Meditation. And so I went for the introductory course there, and my teacher, Leah, She's awesome. A teacher, Leah, she, you know, it's just the introductory thing. She's telling me about it. And she's going around the room. It's about 14 of us. I don't know anybody in the room. It's like, she's going around like, hey, why are you here? Why do you want to learn to meditate? She comes around to me. I go, hey, I'm Harper. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I want to get closer to God. That's what I want to do, the meditation. And she was like, oh. She goes, did you know that Bill W. did this meditation? I went, what? And she goes, yeah, Bill W. did TM. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah. She goes, look it up. So right after the meeting, I'm like on my phone. I'm like, I'm looking it up. Sure enough, I find this whole article. Bill W., when he's dying, you know, he didn't get the 11th step really until he was almost dead. And it's got this whole article about him doing his first meditation. You know, he's dying. He can barely breathe. And there's witnesses saying that he ran through the house after the meditation, like, hey, this stuff really works. And like running through the house, he's outside and it's in the middle of winter and he's taking these deep breaths, you know, that normally with his illness, you shouldn't be able to do, running or breathing cold air. And then after that, the next day they're interviewing him and he's like, I've never felt fully measured in the 11th step until I did this meditation. So it was cool. It was like, I was like, dude, this is all coming together. Like, this is not me doing, this is God doing. Like, I'm not doing this. Like, this stuff's lining up like this. So I did the, so I learned how to do that. And so that's what I've been doing. I do that almost, I'll be honest, I don't do it every day, but I could probably count the days that I haven't done. I always at least do one inventory a day. Sometimes I do six or seven. My sponsor told me, he said, you do two a day and as needed. Because the as needed part is when I'm disturbed, I write it down. I just write it down. I write down my fear, where I'm resentful at. And then he showed me, so to back up too, so I didn't keep reading my inventory. That girl didn't become my sponsor. She was like, hey, who did you see in the meeting that night? And I was like, that guy, John, you know, that's who I want to read my inventory to him. So, and I say read my inventory because we continue to do fifth steps. You know, when I write an inventory down, a lot of times when I do an inventory, when I'm bothered, it's enough to get me relieved, to get me out of here, which is my alcoholism, and get me some freedom and get me some joy to where I can just go out in the day. But sometimes it doesn't. So then I pick up the phone or I text John and I'm like, hey, man, you got time to do a fifth step? Yeah, man, call me up. So I'll call him up and I'll just read it. I read it just like a fourth step to him. I just read it to him. He gives me his honest reflection or not, or he just listens. If he doesn't relate to it, he just listens. But it's that whole piece, you know, admitting to myself, to God, another human being. And then I usually always get instant relief and I'm able to, it's that daily reprieve, right? So that's what I do, man. I do that daily. It's the first time ever in AA, I think I've ever felt like I'm actually doing something. Like I've always when I come to AA, whenever I came back to AA, I always got a home group, always hit a bunch of meetings, always got a job in the home group. I did all those things. And I'm not saying that those things don't work. I'm just saying for me, I would always get drunk again. Because I'd get the sponsor, but I didn't use the sponsor. And I'd always get the sponsor that I knew didn't know that much, because I didn't want to get the one that was going to make me do some work. You know what I mean? I stayed away from those guys, you know. I was a big 13th stepper. I didn't give women a chance. You know, a new woman come up in a meeting board, I was on a man. I mean, like that. Like I told you, I like chase women. That was my thing. I was horrible. I was a horrible AA fella. I was not good. But so now it's. I don't know what happened. I just showed up now at this time, and I swear it seems like everything was just moved for me. It was like I was hopeless enough and I surrendered enough to just let this thing happen for me. And now I'm in the steps. That was the thing. One, two, and three, I had decided on those a long time ago. I just didn't want to go any farther. you know, I wanted to keep carrying all that wreckage behind me, weighing me down. You know, I didn't want to deal with any. I didn't want to look at any of it. I didn't want to get honest with anybody. I didn't want to get honest with myself. I just kept dragging that stuff around with me. And from that first inventory that I took, I just chopped a little bit of that stuff off. And then the continuation of the steps, which to me is 10 and 11 and 12, when I continue to take a 10-step inventory, dude, there's so much. I got 35 years of wreckage. You think I'm going to get rid of it in 4 years? This continuation of just writing it down, just take an honest inventory if I'm disturbed. And it's changed who I am. I got a friend in New York that always says, I came to AA a drunken horse thief. I got sober and I'm still a horse thief. And that's, you know, that's the thing. It's like, okay, I'm not drinking anymore. It's all right. Man, I still got a lot of stuff that's telling me I'm not that good of a person. And then maybe it'd be better if I was just dead. I always tell this. I never, ever thought about committing suicide until I got sober. Never one time when I was drinking. Mm-hmm. When I got sober this last time, right at about 8 or 9 months, I was like, and that's the thing. I do not like when I was sitting there with that beer and that shot in my hand, I knew I would never drink again. So the only other option is to go ahead and just let's just do it. Let's just get it over. And that's where now I know that the steps are more written for taking care of this than this. You know, 1, 2, and 3 gets me sober, but the rest of them are the ones that keep me sober and keep me sane. That girl, Nicole, I was talking about in the beginning that passed away yesterday. The lady that showed her the steps the same exact way that I just shared about, her name is Sylvia, and I've heard her speak on some tapes. She's amazing, just a very spiritually awakened lady. And just, but she always says in the beginning of her talk, when she speaks, is there's three things that AA gave her. Sobriety, of course. Safety, because I never thought about that. I'm like, safety? I do. I feel safe. Like, I've never felt as safe as I do, not just when I'm in AA, but just when I'm like out in the world. I'm not like, you know what I mean? And I'm even like letting people over when I'm driving, you know, and not all the time, but I still don't. But and the other thing was relative sanity. She's got relative sanity. And I'm like, I relate to that. I'm not as insane as I used to be. And that was the thing. It's like these steps help just keep this stuff clear. And for me, it reboots at night. Mm-hmm. That's why when I wake up in the morning, it's like, it's within 10 minutes of my eyes, but even if it can be the smallest thing, like, oh my God, yeah, I got to call that customer. And it's like, just that one little thing can ruminate. And it's like, the next thing you know, I'm obsessing over it. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot to end the agenda. What am I going to wear? Oh my God, I forgot to watch the clips. Oh my God. And it's like, dude. It's like, all right, let's hold on. Let me sit down. Let me write this inventory out. And let me thank God for waking me up this morning. Let me thank God for revealing and removing these fears. And the only prayer I use is the one that's in the 11th step. God, I pray only for knowledge of your will for us and the power to carry that out. I like to keep it simple with the prayers. I don't like the long prayers. One thing, I can't remember them. And I just like the simple just prayer. It's really, really simple for me. Let's see. So I'm surprised why I still kind of pinch myself a lot, like why I'm here. So the reason I'm here is because of Tinder. Because I met that girl that showed me the solution to my alcoholism. And she's the one that she'll tell her story. She said she used to come to AA meetings and have a six pack of beer in the trunk. And we had to meet and she drank it. And somebody showed her what she showed me. So I'm commuting back from Richmond to Charlottesville. I'm like, I gotta go to this meet. So I'm coming back. I'm getting out steel shop dirty. I'm shooting down, man. I'm shooting at that meeting like I shot to the bar to get that first drink. And because I knew I had to have it. I was like, I gotta get this. And so that guy, John, that I asked to be my sponsor, one day out of the blue, he's like, Harper, you ever thought about selling any cars? And I'm like, nope, not one time. Nope, never thought about it. He goes, all right. I just figured I'd ask you because that's his business. And so a few more months later, he goes, man, he goes, you ought to just come down there and work part-time a little bit, see if you like it. I'm like, dude, I was like, I got a great job. I'm a fitter, fabricator, welder. I'm next in line to be superintendent at this shop. I'm making good money. I'm set, man. I'm good to go. This is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. So I did go start working part-time down there. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I don't know how to type. I don't know how to do computers. And I do not know anything about cars. Could care less about them. It was the most beautiful and hardest thing I've ever done in my life was to actually, there was so much fear. You talk about inventory, so much inventory, so much stuff to clear away so I could clear a path for me to even attempt to do this, like even attempt to do it. And I'm liking it. And he's like, why don't you come work full time? I'm like, dude, I'll have to move and everything. He goes, yeah, I know. And I was just like, all right. And it was so weird. It was so, it wasn't even that scary. And it was like, that's what I say. I share a lot about, like, this is not me doing it. Like all that, dude, how would I do that? I'm a welder. I'm a construction worker. I'm a carpenter. I'm a welder. That's what I do. I'm selling cars in Orange County, Virginia, living in Gordonsville, Virginia. What? I'm writing inventories twice a day and meditating twice a day. And I can't stop sharing about it. I want to go out and share them my experience to try to save somebody else's life. That's my purpose now. What? 4 years ago, dude, I got my fifth DUI. I was sitting in Henrico County Jail, and all I could think about was getting back out so I could drink another beer and hoping that my neighbors didn't do all the stuff. You know, that here's it is like 4 years, 3 months later, I'm standing in front of all you beautiful people, some that I don't know and some that I do know, but I know that y'all are my people, y'all are my family, and I know I can count on y'all. And here I am just sharing my experience. You know, that's all I have. I don't know how to tell you to stay sober. I don't know how to stay sober. All I have is my experience. Like that's the trick to this for me. And the trap, like when I start thinking I know how to tell you to stay sober, I'm screwed. I don't know, but I know that I just come here, I share my experience, and I stay sober. And I feel better most days. And I just get to share my experience. So that's all I got. Thanks. Yeah.